Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call to order the Senate Committee on Judiciary. We have a pretty full schedule today, so I'm going to go ahead and get started, even though I don't have counsel next to me. But what we're going to start off with, committee members, is the possible measure of introduction. And I have possession of the following: LC 2280, LC 2898, LC 3073, and LC 3256. The chair will take a motion for moving these as committee bills.
Mr. Chair, I move that LC 2280, LC 2898, LC 3073, and LC 3256 be adopted as committee bills, with the usual caveat.
All right. Madam, thank you. Senator Moamichi has moved those four LCs as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And what we're going to do now is we're going to start our first hearing, which is going to be on Senate Bill 385. And I'm going to open up that public hearing. And what we're going to do is hear from various members. One of Senator Walker and Representative Shields come forward. Basically, I will do the part for our council since he's out doing some other work for the chair. This measure will create a pilot program to fund resources centers in Montgomery, Lane, Marion, and Jackson counties, with one additional resource center in Eastern Oregon. It requires the Department of Corrections to make grants to funds for resource centers, requires the centers to provide, among other things, alcohol and drug assessment and treatment, assessment and planning, housing, employment, and financial and computer literacy training. So with that, whoever is going to start off, please give us your ID and go for it.
I feel like a shrimp in these chairs. They're horrible.
I'm sorry, Madam Senator Walker, that we're not able to accommodate you with one of the cushy chairs.
No.
The reason we have that is we hope that the people that sit there will stay there a very short period of time because of the size of the room. Very short.
I think that's correct, Mr.
That's why
Chair.
We sit up here in these cushy ones.
Yeah. I do miss being with you all. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. I'm home. I actually really miss being with you all, but now I'm down in Ways and Means and on Public Safety with Representative Shields, and we're having a lot of fun. So what I am here about today is to testify on Senate Bill 385 because I'm a member of the Governor's Reentry Council. Haven't attended as many meetings as I would have liked because now they're all during session and I can't go. And prior to that, I had some commitments. But I've still been quite involved, and one of our subcommittees is entitled One-Stop Sites for Transition Success. And that subcommittee has been dealing with how do we provide reentry services for those inmates who are leaving the prison system and coming back into the community. And that's really what the Reentry Council does as a whole. And I think it's an incredible task that we have been given, and way ahead of the curve than most states. Senate Bill 385 specifically would set up some pilot projects for some one-stop shop centers, so to speak, or a resource center, however you want to call it. I would say that more than 4,000 men and women are released from Oregon prisons each year. A third of them will be convicted of a new felony, and most are returned to prison within 3 years. That isn't such a good statistic, colleagues. We're trying to find money in this budget to fund programs, and it just seems senseless when we have to fund more services in prison because people can't make it on the outside, because we haven't really helped them do that. There are significant barriers to reentering society, and I've talked about that before because my own brother spent 17 and a half years in prison, and so I have up close and personal viewpoints about what happens when you try to reenter and become a productive citizen once again. Senate Bill 385 seeks to break that cycle of recidivism by establishing resource centers that provide basic needs for folks who are coming back out into society, and referrals for cognitive behavioral therapy, mentoring, family counseling, and all kinds of support. If you do not have a family when you come out of prison, it is most likely, I would say, that you are most likely to go back before anyone else. it is a tremendous burden to know what to do next, particularly if you've spent a great deal of time in prison, like my own brother. You always passed by when my brother was in prison. I didn't mean such a thing as the internet. And then it came out with computers. You have to get a new driver's license. You have to find housing. You have to get insurance, and you have no credit history because you've been in prison for a while. So really, these kinds of things are necessary for people to reenter and to reestablish themselves. And without family to do it, without someone who knows the system and can help them, there's no one out there to do that. So it is incredibly important that we set up a coordinated system to assist these folks who are coming out of prison so they don't go back. We don't want them back. We set up a framework here in Senate Bill 385 to collaborate with the federal government, and this is really the first effort of its kind in the country. Both the chair and I are very good acquaintances with federal judge Ann Aiken and Eugene, and both of us have had long conversations with what Eugene has been doing on reentry issues, and I think that Judge Aiken has presented us with some really fine examples of how we can collaborate with the federal government. Sponsors Incorporated in Eugene, as the chair and many of you probably know about, is a great reentry sort of facility in Eugene that helps folks reenter. They can't do it all, but they have been in Eugene for a number of years, and Representative Shields has a facility in Portland that has been similar to Eugene's, and I think that they could help participate in this pilot program because they know what they're doing, and it's nice to start out with people who know what they're doing. Finally, I would say that we need some education assistance provided here, and the community colleges should be actually a participant in this effort. And I don't know how we swing it all together, but truly we need to understand how people can be retrained and able to go out in the workforce. Some of you may be sitting here and saying, why are we providing all these services to inmates and not people who've observed the law? Well, I will tell you that inmates, they serve their time. They break the law, they go to jail, they go to prison, they serve their time, and when they come out, they're on the same playing field as anyone else. Unfortunately, that playing field looks a little bit different because now they have a history, a criminal history that often precludes them from having other opportunities that people in the community have. I'll tell you that my brother, in the 5-6 years that he's been out, rose to the level of a supervisor at his position, a tremendous employee for his business, and now he's not working there because the company is having trouble, but he also had surgery and then a stroke, and so he's now recovering, and it will be a long time before he's able to work again. But he did contribute to society. He did what we ask people to do when they go serve time, and they come back into our community, and they are tremendous assets. And so that's what I'm asking, is that we take a look at this and see about making this happen. I know that my co-chair of Ways and Means, Senator Margaret Carter, has told me no new programs, but there can be new programs within existing resources and using federal resources and federal stimulus money. So I don't want to just say no because it's a new program. I think give us an opportunity. Representative Shields and I serve on the Public Safety Committee along with co-chair Joanne Verger. And I think we may be able to find some way to fund this program that it does not impact our general fund budget.
All right. Thank you, Representative Shields. And I'm just going to call on the time. We've got about 10 people on this bill that need to testify, so we want to make sure we get that record. And I got two other bills.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I'm State Representative of District 43 in North and Northeast Portland, here in support of Senate Bill 385. I passed out some information to you that we had heard in the Public Safety Strategies Task Force that I had the pleasure of chairing, and Senator Prezansky had the pleasure of being a member of. This is the presentation that Dr. Ed Letessa gave to to that committee in the interim, I believe, but we also had received it in numerous other instances in front of this body. So real briefly, I think there have been some significant advances over the last 15 years in what works and what doesn't in reducing antisocial behavior and recidivism of people coming out of prison. I think this would put in a framework for pilot projects that would be important. I'm here as a representative, not necessarily as the co-chair of the public safety sub, to put my stamp of approval on this, because we have some very difficult decisions to make. But my recommendation is, let's get this framework down to the Ways and Means Committee, and we can put this into the mix. And like as Senator Walker said, there's the Second Chance Act, federal dollars that could flow through this over time. There's the Byrne grants, the JAG grants, where we, I think, have $4 billion that could cooperatives could apply for some of that money. So there are other options, and so I'm just here in support of the concept, and I'll get out of the way. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you all very much. Before you leave, though, is there any questions for Senator Wissa?
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski. I really believe that these reentry programs are underfunded and inadequate at the current time in most areas. I also know that we're contemplating cutting $12 million from the community corrections budget for just the rest of this year, and who knows how much for the 9/11 budget. And I wonder if this is the time now to create a new program, as you mentioned. But wouldn't it be more appropriate at this time to enhance existing community corrections programs, using those community corrections programs who do a good job now, by selecting those existing programs to use as a pilot and an example, to lead by example? I mean, rather than set up a new program, why don't we focus on those current community correction operations that are doing this to the best of their ability, the best in the state, and then go forward with that?
Yes, sure. Mr. Chair, Senator Whitson, thank you for the question. I think what you would find in these pilots is that there are organizations that are doing this work individually in their own little silos. I think the point behind this bill is to bring them all together in a one-stop setting. It does take a little bit more resources to have staff located off-site. But your point's very well taken. I think that's the type of thing we would want to hash out in Ways and Means.
Thank you.
Senator Dingfelder.
Actually, I had the same question about coordination with other community corrections programs, but I do have a suggestion for funding, which is beer tax.
Okay. We could debate that, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah. We have quite enough time before y'all leave. I'll put on the record for Senator Wiss that we're going to have a number of people today. One of the individuals that will be speaking to us is Ron Chase, who is the director of sponsors. Well, I can tell you from my perspective, I met with Ron back in 94 for the first time about their program, and it's one that is, my understanding, costs less than doing it within the community correction structure, and it is a one-stop where they actually have close monitoring, where they're getting them into housing, getting them into work, making certain that they're going through drug treatment with the testing, and giving a lot of the other skill sets. So it's kind of like, how can we, as you're saying, take what we have, maybe introduce some new, and some of it may be financially better, easier to afford. I'm not saying it's going to be more efficient, but it may be more efficient through that other process.
And from my perspective, Steve Berger's operation in Klamath County is already doing most of this stuff within the community corrections framework.
Right. So. Great. All right. Thank you all very much. And what I'm going to do is I've been given a list of panel to bring forward, so Ross Shepherd and Doug Clark Road.
Chairman Brzezinski and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I'm Ross Shepherd. I'm a lawyer from Eugene. I don't represent any organization, and it's my honor to be seated beside my longtime colleague, former Lane County District Attorney Doug Harkleroad. I was the Lane County Public Defender for a period that can be measured in decades, and Doug and I served every day of that together. So we are here today on Senate Bill 385 that, as you know, establishes pilot resource centers in five parts of the state, and the five parts that are delineated serve about 75% of the people that are released from Oregon prisons. These folks, these inmates, are released with very little, $30 on a debit card and a bus ticket to their county of conviction, and really nothing more than that. So these resource centers will provide, either by direct service or by streamlined referral for basic needs, such as food and clothing, which many of these folks desperately need, and then the necessary skills that they'll have to acquire to get along in this very complicated society. And you'll notice specifically cognitive behavioral therapy is mentioned in the bill, and this committee has heard that that is essential for effective reentry. Housing is also mentioned, and my experience on the Governor's Reentry Council has shown to every member of that organization that housing is absolutely essential for effective reentry. Sponsors in Eugene, and Mr. Chair, I don't believe Ron Chase is going to be able to be here today, but maybe okay. He'll still show. But housing is an essential component of effective reentry, and as you have heard, Eugene is the only county, Lane County is the only county that has a stable and ongoing transitional housing facility. So it's a need that needs to be addressed elsewhere in the state. All of the services that are listed in this bill, and members of the committee, if you would look, if you want to track the bill, it's on amendments are on this document. It looks like this, and that's what Doug and I will be addressing most. And I think all of your witnesses have been provided with that and are aware of its contents. All of these services are evidence-based and all comply with the work that has been done by the one-stop work group of the Governor's Reentry Council. I started my legislative journey actually before the Senate Judiciary Committee with another Lane County prosecutor as the chair, Bill Fry. So that's many years ago, and in my personal experience, I've never seen a bill that right out of the box attracted the support of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, the Oregon District Attorneys Association, law enforcement, and community service providers. So at least in my experience, this is a first, but the merits of this bill are evident on its face, and almost anybody that's asked what their first impression is of the merits of this bill say, of course we should be doing this, but then the of course leads to where's the money. So that is a decision that will be left to Ways and Means. We are extremely fortunate to have already existing service providers in the three major counties that are listed. Mercy Corps Northwest, this is an adjunct of Mercy Corps, which we know from reading the front page of our newspaper, the World News, in providing relief to folks in distress from natural disaster or political unrest all over the world. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Marion County, St. Vincent de Paul is the patron saint of the poor. And you have heard about sponsors and today, and most of you know of the fine work that venerable institution does. So in summary, this bill reduces victimization, reduces recidivism, reduces the need for court, district attorney, and public defender services. It reduces the need for additional prison and jail beds. It increases the chance of a productive of the inmate, the returnee, leading a productive and tax-paying life. The efforts outlined in this bill are biblically enjoined. And it's the moral and fair thing to do for these former incarcerated people. As I said, this matter will be decided in Ways and Means. There are many funding possibilities and opportunities that this idea raises. So there can be county participation. We certainly hope there is state participation. I will be addressing you in just a little bit about what the federal opportunities might be. There is certainly a chance for philanthropic and foundation support. So I hope today the committee finds it appropriate to allow these opportunities, indeed, to be further explored and see if we can't at least give the ideas in this bill a good start. Thank you.
So, Ross, before I'm going to go off script, I know that we're going to be part of a panel. Looks like now it would be a panel of one regarding the federal stuff.
Yes.
And if you're ready, we'd like to go ahead and just take that testimony now instead of, and then we get Doug's, and we'll just open it up at that point.
Well, very well. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Pazoski. Indeed, a partnership has been formed with Judge Ann Aiken. She is now the Chief Judge of the Federal District Court of Oregon. She is also the head of the training branch of the Ninth Circuit Court of the United States, the entire West Coast. And any of you that know that her contacts are very far-ranging. And perhaps that's exemplified by a conference that's going to be held at the Calvary Christian Church in Portland, which will be the one-stop site in Portland. It's a great old building. It was the first YMCA in Portland, built in 1900. So it has a gymnasium and an auditorium, and it's potentially the perfect one-stop. So Judge Aiken, with the help of Mercy Corps, has organized a conference that we'll get more information, certainly to you senators, on the 2nd and 3rd of April. And there will be participants from Washington, D.C., St. Louis, Washington State legislators are interested in this idea, and we think will be there. And two of the crucial components will be how to evaluate the efforts that a one-stop would undertake through some strict statistical analysis, and also further explore how we might find funding for this. So I have given to the committee two copies of a booklet that is an analysis of the reentry court in the Federal District of Oregon. We can get some more copies of this book if you'd like, but this is Judge Aiken's reentry court. And of use to us are the method of analysis that was used and the basic tenets for successful reentry that are summarized in this well-put-together booklet. And this bill is consonant with everything that is, all the conclusions that are drawn within this report on the federal reentry court. Now, we're not proposing to you that we do reentry courts on the state level. But what we are proposing is that federal releasees have exactly the same needs as state returning inmates. There has never been an effort in the United States to try to coordinate the provision of these services. Oregon will be first. There are folks in Washington, D.C., and not to drop names, but Senator Webb from Virginia and Senator Durbin from Illinois are working on an amendment to the Second Chance Act that might provide funding just exactly for this kind of effort. And I'll also tell you that three Supreme Court judges of the United States Supreme Court, are, including Justice Thomas, know of this Oregon effort and are supportive. So I would take a studied conclusion that something's going to happen here. And we would be wasting a golden opportunity to let this go by in 2009. So for all of those reasons, I ask your support on this bill.
Thank you. Doug?
Chairman Sansky, members of the committee, my name is Doug Harkelrode, the retired Lane County District Attorney, and I am a lawyer in private practice. I represent the Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance. I'm going to be brief. You have the amendments. Through the courtesy of Mr. Taylor, we've gotten those to LC, and as you all know, they're backed up. Alex Gardner is the Lane County District Attorney. He's out of state and couldn't come today, although he wanted to. He asked his chief deputy, Patty Perlow, to appear, And she called me last night and said she was at a homicide death investigation scene and they were going to be continuing working this morning. However, she did fax me some information that she had put together, and I'm not going to read it to you, but I am going to mention that Tom Roush is a parole and probation officer in Lane County. He has been there for 9 years, and he specializes in the folks who are let out of the penitentiary. He uses sponsors extensively, which is our local program in Lane County that I've long been a supporter of. Alex Gardner is a supporter of, and that's a housing program as well as a job program, and it, Tom believes that it reduces recidivism. We haven't done any studies, so we can't prove that. Anyhow, I just wanted to get that in, that Mr. Gardner is very supportive. Now, in the amendment that you have on the back side, number 9 in red, is a very strongly worded evaluation component. Ross and I wrote it. And the whole idea, and who knows what LC will do when it comes back, but...
only time will tell.
Yeah, only time will tell. But the whole purpose of that is to use evidence-based practices and make this thing work and know it works by evaluating it. And the reason that is so important is because if we can reduce the recidivism rate, we can save a lot of money. And Ross mentioned all the ways we can save that money. The Washington State Institute for Public Policy, and Mr. Taylor was kind enough to provide this to another group that he's working with, studied 571 different programs to determine whether or not they work. And they figured out some work and some don't. And one that works very well is intensive supervision treatment-oriented programs, and that fits right in to Senate Bill 385, or Senate Bill 385 fits right into that, however you want to say it. And so that's the whole idea here. And in addition to reducing recidivism, we rebuild lives. So I'm not surprised that there is such broad-range support from all different factions for this bill, and I'll stop there.
I open up the panel for questions. No questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, our next panel is going to be Doug Cooper and Ann O'Malley.
Good morning, Chair Przanski, committee members. My name is Ann O'Malley, for the record. I'm another local attorney. There are several of us in the room, I see. I also am a small business owner in Portland. I'm going to be extremely brief. I think the point of our being up here is to give you kind of a representative sample of what Senator Whipsett was saying earlier. We've been on the ground organizing these efforts for nigh on 2 years now in Multnomah County. What we're trying to do is combine all of the resources that we have so that it's streamlined. Doug Cooper of Mercy Corps Northwest and I have been chairing, co-chairing, as you, if you would, a loosely based organization called ROAR. That was accidental, by the way. But it's Re-Entry Organizations and Resources. And we called together all those organizations, faith-based, state agencies, local agencies, county groups, and community providers who were interested in the reentry continuum, to see how we couldn't make that flow more smoothly in Multnomah County, where we do indeed have a large portion of those reentering our society. The ROAR members, I'm going to give you just a smattering of who they are. We're about 45 agencies and organizations. Calvary Christian Church was already mentioned. We also are working with Department of Corrections Home for Good, Volunteers of America, Partnership for Safety and Justice, Multnomah County, City of Portland, Bureau of Housing and Community Development, the Federal Halfway House, the U.S. Probation Office. We've got Vocational Rehabilitation and Veterans Administration involved. And again, all that just by representative way of saying we're bringing these organizations together in order to serve the people we're looking to serve. District Attorney Michael Schrunk was going to come say a word. He was unable to come. He did, however, manage to write a very nice letter in support, and your copies are available. I'll read you only the very last sentence. And it is for all of these reasons that I enthusiastically support Senate Bill 385 and hope that you will pass it.
Thank you. That's part of the record, and I think they were distributed to all the members, so thank you. All right.
see Doug.
Senator Vanessa, members of the committee, thank you for having us. My name is Doug Cooper. I'm the Assistant Director of Mercy Corps Northwest, and we are the Domestic Economic Development Program of Mercy Corps, which is the International Relief and Development Agency and headquartered in Portland. Our organization, our program, shares Mercy Corps' larger mission of alleviating suffering, poverty, and oppression by building secure, productive, and just communities. And we think that applies equally to our communities here in Oregon as it does in the 34 other programs that we run around the world. Our involvement in this issue came through our work at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, where we developed and delivered a 26-week course in self-employment and small business development. And what we saw firsthand as our women began to reenter, we began to see the difficulties they had in navigating the system and the resources that were available to them as they struggled to get to normalize their lives. Our response, in part, was to help catalyze ROAR, which Ann already talked about, and at a practical level, to help organize the transition center. In front of you, you have a longer description of both the center and a schematic of the organizational diagram. We want to emphasize three key points to this bill that we're very supportive of. First of all, and this goes directly to Senator Whitsitt's question.
One of the key points is that it's an effort to
organize and leverage the existing resources that are already out there working on reentry. There's a large number of community-based organizations already doing this work, but the problem is they are relatively isolated, they're not coordinated, and that was one of the lessons that we drew when we organized ROAR, is a lot of these organizations hadn't even been talking to each other, much less working together in concert. So part of the idea is to take those community-based organizations and organize them so that they're more effective work among themselves. The second part of this bill is it systemically aligns those community-based organizations with the efforts of DOC and the County Department Communities of Justice to ensure that there's an effective continuum all the way from the work that's going on already within the institutions through probation and parole and that initial area of reentry all the way through to successful long-term reintegration. And that can't be done without the help of the community-based organizations. And it's certainly more effective if that whole work is aligned in the system, and that's a good extent of what this bill helps to encourage. And the third concept is that this has been identified nationally as evidence-based best practices, but we recognize that in each county in Oregon, this may look different based on the different resources in the county, existing programs that are already there. The concept will remain the same, but it's going to look very different in applications in each county, and we think that this bill allows for that flexibility throughout the state. Thank you.
Right, thank you. Questions? Thank you all very much. And let's see, our next panel is Kimberly. Is it Elaine? And then Walt, why don't you come on up? And Jeff Wood. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair Podzamski and members of Judiciary Committee, I am Kimberly Lane, Executive Director of St. Vincent de Paul Society that serves Marion Polk and Yamhill Counties. For the past 4 years, I have been working closely with community corrections in Marion County to develop what we now call the Marion County Reentry Initiative. This initiative has taken time, but success is mounting. In 2007, we entered a contractual relationship with Marion County Community Corrections and now are engaged in prison reach-ins 3 months prior to an offender's release to our county. We also work with offenders in conducting evidence-based assessments and in-depth planning and goal setting to promote an offender's success from the moment of release. We opened a Center for Family Success in Salem in November of 2007, where we facilitate parenting supports, employment assistance, pro-social activities, and wraparound services with a focus on ex-offenders who are parents, along with those desiring to reunite with their children who are caring for by relatives or foster parents. I would like to share a story with you to put a face on why we're doing what we're doing. And Megan actually wrote this, and I changed it from first person to third. So, Megan was 20 years old when she tried methamphetamine for the first time. She became addicted the first time she tried it. 2 weeks later, she was using it every day. She had no control. Meth controlled her completely. Her family tried to help, but she didn't take the assistance. Within a few months, she lost custody of her child, lost her job, lost her home. That's when she became desperate, starting to commit crimes for money to support her drug habit. She was sentenced to 52 months at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility with a minimum of 26 months. The reality of her actions began to set in. Watching her son exit through those doors each time he visited motivated her to change. While she was at Coffee Creek, she had the opportunity to take part in classes to change her thinking, sharpen her decision-making skills, and help her maintain a bond with her son and grow as a mother. After 36 months, the time was coming for her release to the community. She did the work, preparing for this reentry, much of which included building a support system. Before her release, she met Deb Davis from Marion County Reentry Initiative. On September 26, 2008, she was released from prison and soon after met with MCRI and the Center for Family Success staff, Deb Davis and Christopher Hupp. They helped her set goals and plan the steps to reach those goals. They shared resources, kept in contact, helped her set appointments with the Employment Department, and so much more. Marion County Reentry Initiative and the Center for Family Success also matched her with a wonderful mentor. With her mentor, she established trust and built communication skills. Having support coming out of prison is a must, and between MCRI and the Center for Family Success, her mentor and family, she had amazing support and feels very lucky for it. Megan shares that. So many things went through my mind coming out of prison. If I could do it, what if I couldn't? It was extremely hard and is still challenging. But today, my life is different, better. I take pride in being part of my community, clean, sober, and active. I'm most grateful to the Marion County Reentry Initiative and the Center for Family Success for all their help, support, and most of all, believing in me like a person rather than a statistic. I enjoy my life today and take one day at a time, moving on to a brighter future. Megan's story is about a person who was held accountable for her actions, was motivated to change, and there were people and system supports to encourage her to succeed at the time she was ready to do the work and make those changes. Today, Megan is a mom supporting her son and involved in her community in a very positive way. This is what this work is all about. Let's do more of it, and we are working hard in Marion County to do just that. On March 4th, next week, we are celebrating a grand opening of a new 12-bed transitional housing facility here in Salem. You should all have received an invitation to that event, and we hope that you can stop by. With regard to Senate Bill 385, I participated in several work groups of the Governor's Reentry Council. Senate Bill 385 is connected to the work in the one-stop work group which Ross Shepherd chaired. County Commissioner Janet Carlson and others from Marion County were active participants in that group. We appreciate Mr. Shepherd's enthusiastic efforts to locate resources for integrated evidence-based reentry efforts, such as the Marion County Reentry Initiative. We support this bill conceptually and have several amendments that we propose to the committee. One, line 7 to 9, page 1, we propose that participating county...
Kimberly?
Yes.
Instead of going through each of those, mm-hmm. We have that in writing. Okay. We'll work with council on that, but it sounds like you do have some proposed changes for us to consider. Is that fair enough?
That's mm-hmm. That would make me very happy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank is you. There others, anything else you'd like to share with us?
Well, actually, the only other closing thing would be to thank you all for having the opportunity to look at this and move it forward. And I would pass the mic to Jeff Wood.
Thank you.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jeff Wood. I'm the Acting Lieutenant for the Parole and Probation Division of the Marion County Sheriff's Office. I am here on behalf of the Sheriff's Office and to support my fellow attendees, Marion County District Attorney Walt Baglow and Executive Director Kimberly Lane. As a responsible body for releasing people into the Marion County community from prisons and our local jails, the Marion County Sheriff's Office realizes transition and reentry is a complicated process and no small task. Over the past several years, Oregon, like many other states, has seen a sharp growth in our prison population. Of the approximately 13,500 inmates in the Department of Corrections custody, 93% will someday be released when they have completed their sentences in custody. In Marion County, this translates into approximately 1,000 releases a year into our local community, meaning more men and women will reenter society labeled as an offender. When a released inmate reoffends, the results are immeasurable to the victims of recidivism. The results of recidivism are also substantial to the taxpayers in additional systems costs of law enforcement, the judicial system, and, of course, corrections. As a result, we, the Marion County Sheriff's Office, in partnership with St. Vincent de Paul Society, developed what we now call the Marion County Reentry Initiative. MCRI is designed to facilitate the transition process and provide social support, housing, and services to those offenders ready and willing to make a positive change in their lives. As a result of our MCRI endeavor, we understand the need for one-stop wraparound social services towards our releasing population to produce the highest probability of success. We applaud Senate Bill 385 and its enthusiastic efforts to locate resources for integrated, evidence-based reentry, such as our Marion County Reentry Initiative. Although I'd like to express my conceptual support of Senate Bill 385, I would also respectfully recommend the following amendments to the committee, and they are the same as Kimberly Elaine. So in the interest of brevity, that concludes my testimony. I'd like to thank you for your time.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Walt.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name's Walt Beglaw. I'm the Marion County District Attorney, and I'm also a member of the Steering Committee on the Reentry Council. I am convinced that the more opportunities we provide to offenders reentering our communities from correction facilities and on supervision, the greater the chance they have to succeed, contribute in their communities, support their families, and remain crime-free. So, the concept of the one-stop resource centers was a top priority of the steering committee, and it lays out the multitude of components and critical supports and those aligning services that we need to integrate in the community. I've seen those wraparound resources work in our community, and I believe Senate Bill 385 moves those core principles forward. So I'm confident the Oregon District Attorneys Association will take a close look at the final product and lend a supportive hand.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Thank you all very much. Let's see. Greg is... Oh, there he is. I've been looking for you. All right, that's fine. Greg's here, and then is David Rogers here? Not seeing him. And that's all I have on the pre-script panel. So, Greg, why don't you sign in, and then we'll open it up for other people.
Thank you, Chair Krasinski. Morning, Mr. Chair and Senators. My name is Greg Hazarabedian. I am a criminal defense lawyer. I've practiced criminal defense law exclusively for the 17 years since they gave me a bar card. I have been in private practice. Currently, I am the Executive Director of Public Defender Services of Lane County. In addition, right now, I am the President of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, so I speak to you with a couple different hats today. As all my colleagues have, we've seen many of our clients go to prison, we've seen many of our clients get released, and we've seen many of those same people go back to prison. They were unsuccessful in making the changes needed to avoid the criminal life and end up back in prison. And I think one of the main reasons people are unsuccessful when they get out is they do not have what I would call cultural literacy. I don't know if that's a correct term to use or not, but that's my shorthand. They don't know how to access the services they need to get the help they need to be successful. They don't. I've had clients call me up with very simple questions who have been released about where to get hold of somebody to talk about housing. Have you thought about the County Housing Authority? No, they hadn't. They didn't know such a thing existed. If I were to then say to them, instead, just look up the number and call the County Housing Authority to talk about Section 8 housing, or whoever it is you're supposed to call, that would never happen. I need to look up the phone number. I need to give them the phone number. I need to give them the phone number on a piece of paper, and then maybe the phone call will happen. These are people who don't know how to navigate our world successfully. That's why they're in the lives that they're in. The kind of awareness and the kind of functionality that we middle-class people take for granted is not necessarily something that ought to be taken for granted in the population we're talking about here today and the population that this bill is designed to give a helping hand to. As an example, the United Ways across Oregon are working on a 211 project where that would be a website or call centers, and that's to help poor people in the community access services who don't have the additional burden of just being released from prison, who don't have the additional burden of possibly suffering from mental health issues. Many of those returning from prison have mental health issues that further aggravates their efforts to be successful in society. It further frustrates them when they come to roadblocks along the way. What we need to do is to help those people overcome the barriers to success. When we do, we have offenders who become taxpayers. We have people who stop criminal conduct, stop victimizing fellow Oregonians, start getting jobs, start paying taxes, and maybe most importantly, in these economic times, stop using expensive Department of Corrections beds. I can chime in on the support of sponsors. I've known Ron Chase since the late 80s and know the work that sponsors does. Sponsors is the first step in the right direction. This bill would help take us some of the rest of the way. I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thanks, Garrick. All right, that's all I had on the list and on the registration. Is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on Senate Bill 385? Not seeing anyone. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 385. And Council, at this point, it looks like we've got the revenue statements.
Chairman of the Committee, we just got the revenue impact statements. We have the fiscal impact statements. 107 has a... They both have amendments. 107 has a respectable fiscal and probably needs to
go away. All right. So we're going to go ahead and open up the first of the work sessions on Senate Bill 106. And Council, remind us.
Senate Bill 106 comes from the Oregon Youth Authority and it allows the Oregon Youth Authority to contract with federally recognized Indian tribes in Oregon to provide gang intervention services to the tribe. You have the dashboard amendments, which basically they are the bill. And they're set forth in the Dashboard Amendments. It talks about the Youth Authority may receive applications. It talks about what a youth is. It defines that by reference to 419A004 and further. So that you have in front of you, it has a minimal fiscal impact. I know the Youth Authority is here and probably members of the tribes too. If you want to get them, but
all right, what I'm going to do is ask the committee, do we want to bring anyone up since we have the dash ones in front of us, or are we ready to move? All right.
I was going to say, I would just like an explanation of what, can we just have a quick explanation about why the dash ones are necessary?
As a committee, I think they clarify the bill. They set forth in greater detail what a youth is, what grants they can make and what grants they cannot make. For example, tribes are not eligible for diversion funds of the 420-017. I guess agency could probably better address the policy issue on that. So,
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Bobby Mink, Interim Director of the Department of Human Services. The Dash 1 amendments expand the original bill slightly. The original bill gave us the ability to contract with tribes for gang-related services. Now, right now, the Oregon Youth Authority has no ability to contract with tribes whatsoever. And so we wanted to expand the original bill for the limited purpose of gang activity for other types of special ad hoc funds we may receive to give the tribes an opportunity to compete for those grant funds. And this specifically excludes the traditional formula funds for diversion, basic services, and individual services that the counties receive. So it doesn't do that. It would be the ad hoc monies we may receive from time to time to serve the youth. Let me give you a hypothetical example. If the Oregon Youth Authority were to receive a funding stream from the federal government, say, to address alcohol and drug issues with Native American youth in order to prevent delinquency, right now under current law, we wouldn't be able to contract with the tribes to help with that. We'd have to go through counties or some other entity. And so the Dash 1 amendments would allow us then to do something with a grant for alcohol and drug. And that's why I wanted to expand it from just the limited gang funding the way the bill was originally written. And so that's all it does. It gives us the ability to contract with the tribes for ad hoc funding, not the regular mainstream funding we have for counties.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I read this some of this literature correctly, the counties do have that authority to contract with the tribes, and when given the opportunity to provide an RFP to the Oregon Youth Authority to do that, only two counties out of 36 responded. Do you have a comment on why?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know why. I'm new here. But I do know there's great frustration amongst the tribes right now about sometimes it doesn't flow through the counties as well as they would hope. Now, having said that, some counties work very well with the tribes, and I know that Marion Pope County, for example, worked with the Grand Ronde tribe around the gang funding stream that we had and partnered with them. But I think you would have to ask some of the tribal members in the audience about that. I don't know about that relationship. I haven't been here long enough.
Okay.
Any other questions for
Bobby, thank you. Senator Wissett, did you want someone from the tribes to come up?
Actually, I would, because we know we do have that situation in Klamath County.
Justin, whoever you recommend. And if you'd be so kind to give us your name.
Yeah. Good morning. My name is David Fullerton. I'm the Director of Social Services for Confederate Tribes at Grand Ronde. I had the privilege of speaking before you when this bill came up last time. Just so I understand, the question is what is the issue between the counties and the tribes? Is that correct?
It is my understanding that the counties were offered the opportunity to do RFPs for the services, and only two of 36 counties responded. So I was wondering why.
Correct. That RFP came out for that gang funding in 2008 with the requirement that funding was contingent based on county plans, included cooperation, coordination with the tribes. Like you said, only two responded to that RFP, Polk and Marion County. I think it's just relationships with the tribes and the counties and that lack of cooperation and communication. Our feeling is, you know, with Senate Bill 770, our business should take place with the lead state agency, being Oregon Youth Authority or DHS. And a lot of times in when you've got 36 counties, 9 federally recognized tribes, we, Grand Ronde, for example, lies within 6 county service area. To get out and negotiate those agreements with 6 separate counties for one funding source makes it difficult at times. That's just speaking for Grand Ronde, and I'll let these folks from Warm Springs and Celeste speak.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Jim Soles. I'm a captain with the Warm Springs Tribal Police Department. Excuse me. To answer your question, sir, the relationships are not what they should be, and we don't get told about these funding opportunities at all from the county. And so we're not even aware when they occur unless we happen to meet in the government-to-government law enforcement cluster meeting. We hear about them after the fact from, or even before the fact, from the Oregon Youth Authority, but we can't talk to them directly about accessing the funds. And so this... We have very serious gang problems on the Warm Springs Indian Reservation, a lot of violence associated with that. This would give us opportunity to have that direct relationship that certainly would be in standing with the government-to-government agreements and meetings that take place now. And it would be certainly in a benefit to our youth that are struggling right now. And it's not just unique to Warm Springs. Indian country across the whole Northwest and the state of Oregon is struggling with gang issues. And so any help we could get without taking anything away from the counties would be a great asset to us.
All right. Any other questions? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming forward and giving us an explanation.
Would it be okay for me to speak? Confederated Tribes of Celeste?
That's fine. I mean, what we were doing is bringing people up just to answer questions. If you had something that you wanted to
supplement it, we'll take a little bit of time to do that.
Okay. My name is George Nagel, and I'm here representing the Confederated Tribes of Siletz. And the one remark that I'd like to make is that tribal communities and the gang issue in particular, and as well as with alcohol and drug and other issues, there's a particular component to addressing those issues within the tribe and tribal communities that has a cultural and spiritual aspect to it that I think oftentimes counties don't have an understanding of and have an inability to respond to, and tribes and tribal services are in the best position and have the experience and the expertise to address those issues themselves. And I think that it would enhance that ability to do that is if we don't have to try to go through the counties in order to try to secure funds, but we can directly contract with OIA.
Thank you. The genesis of the question was in Klamath County we have similar problems, and I was wondering why the counties have not taken that opportunity.
All right, gentlemen, again, thank you all very much for putting this on the record. And Chair is willing to entertain a motion regarding the Dash 1s.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 to SB 106.
Senator Boquist moves the Dash 1s into Senate Bill 106. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 106 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 106 as amended by the Dash 1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Any volunteers?
Volunteer.
All right, Senator Wissett, thank you. And the last bill we have for work session is Senate Bill 107. I'll open up the work session for Senate Bill 107. And, Council?
Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 107 comes to you from the Oregon Youth Authority, and it basically would allow Oregon to join the new Juvenile Interstate Compact. You have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you, which clarify certain things as relates to how we would fund it and other issues. For example, if the compact and the regulations of the compact would not supersede the Oregon Constitution. These amendments were put together by the Department of Justice for the Youth Authority, cooperation with the Legislative Council's office.
All right. And committee, Chair is ready to move the bill. It does have a does not have a substantive referral to Ways and Means, but because of the substantial amount, it appears that 09-11 would be over $100,000. 11-13 would be $278,000. It appears to me that what we need to do is, one, if we're moving forward, adopt the amendment, and then have a proposal with a due pass recommendation with a request for a referral to Ways and Means. Is that correct? Yes. All right. So, Senator Boquist?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 into SB 107.
Senator Boquist moves the Dash 1s into Senate Bill 107. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move SB 107 be referred. I think that's the right way. Referred to Ways and Means with a due pass.
All right.
Is that what we need to do?
I think that's close to what I had. We did this yesterday, and I know there's technical language, but I think we're getting the message across. The proposal at this point is to move or have a due pass recommendation for Senate Bill 107 as amended by the Dash 1s with the request basically to the President to have a referral to Ways and Means because of the fiscal that we've received.
To my motion, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just to clarify, I want to make sure it goes down to Ways and Means, and I'll support it in the committee, but if it turns out going straight to the floor, then I'll be a no vote on the floor because it does have a large fiscal and it really needs to go to Ways and Means.
The bottom line is this comes directly to the floor. The chair will be making a motion to bring it back to committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, so that's clarified. Any other discussion? Any objections to that caveat? So ordered. And we do not need a carrier, since this is going to Ways and Means. 106 was Senator Wissett. All right, so this takes care of what we've got done today. Tomorrow we are not meeting, but I do want to put everyone on notice as to what's happening on Monday. As all of us realize, it's the last day for entry of new LCs into committee as committee bills and to enter the process as well as our own personal bills. In speaking with staff this morning, it appears that we have somewhere in the range of about 40, that's 40, committee bills that we are going to still be needing to introduce. And I expect that number to go up.
So this is how we're going to try to do this. We're going to set our meeting for next week. We're scheduled to start at 8:45, and so we'll start then. And then what we're going to do is we'll take care of the work that we have as to any potential LCs for committee bills, and then whatever else we have on our agenda. Then we will recess. And the reason for the recess is because it's been tradition that our committee has been a backstop for entry of bills through a committee process. I'm not sure exactly when, but we may need to come back in the afternoon. I'm assuming that's going to be sometime around 4 or 4:30. I will probably be stepping out of a committee if necessary to reconvene and hopefully just adjourn. But if there are a couple of bills, we may need to get a quorum here. And I guess I'd ask of the committee members, I know many of us have committees starting at 3, and we'll meet you. I know you're chairing.
I'm in Senator Hass's committee on Monday from 3 to 5.
Okay.
But if you need me, I can step away from that.
Yeah, I don't have a committee, so
should
be
fine. Okay, it sounds like we can cover it. I just want to give everyone a heads up that we may need to reconvene sometime between 4 and 4:30 for the sole purpose of just getting the remainder into the process. Council, anything else?
I do have a Ways and Means sub from 3 to 4:30.
Okay. You're okay?
I have no committee here, so there'll be three of us.
Okay, that sounds good. The goal will be we'll meet somewhere between 4 and 4:30, because once we do this, then they have to go to the Secretary of the Senate for
we'll
final process.
Possible. We'll find a hearing.
Okay.
This may be occupied at that time.
All right. And we'll, if we need to do that, we'll let you know. If not, then what I'll do is come in and just adjourn and not worry about having a quorum on that. That would be meet parliamentary procedure, if I remember correctly. All right. With that, thank you all very much. Have a good, safe weekend, and we'll see everyone on Monday.